Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast, coming to you all the way from the Orange Bunker. My name is Dave, and today I am joined, as usual, by my wingman, Ashley.
What's up, everyone?
How are you, Ashley?
I am fabulous.
Do you know what that reference was from?
No.
The wingman reference.
Oh, we're all the way back there? Yeah, I do. Top Gun. Hello.
Top Gun. Have you seen it?
I've seen it a long time ago.
I don't think you saw it.
I have seen it.
Well, there was a famous love song during that movie. Do you know what it was?
The songs from Dirty Dancing keep coming to my mind, but those aren't
there. That'll do. Just do a song from Dirty Dancing.
She's like the wind.
You went with Patrick Swayze's one song.
I don't know why that just came to me.
That is amazing. Well, you know, here in the Orange Bunker, we are not just about old movie references and trying to get Ashley to sing, although that is one of my favorite parts. We are also trying to come up with ideas and conversations so that you can go out and influence the next generation. Isn't that right, Ashley?
Yes.
It's so good. How do you think everything's going so far?
I'm loving it.
Yes, and you are going to be loving today's episode. We have a great one planned. Ash, can you tell us a little bit about what's coming up?
Yeah, we just heard Reggie talk a little bit about the Orange strategy, and we're unpacking it. And Reggie talked to us about the idea that we want to influence leaders who will influence the parents and the faith community. So if you take the red, the heart of the family, and you take the yellow, the light of the church, and you mix them together, you get the color orange. I'm taking you to art class right now, people.
Yes.
All right.
I feel like I'm in grade three again. That's amazing.
Because we believe that two combined influences is always stronger than two separate influences.
I absolutely love that.
And the two combined influences, the parents and the faith community, will influence the next generation with a message that mobilizes them to love God and serve others.
That is so good. It's such a great visual. Using those two colors and the way that they combine really just wraps everything up. Absolute genius. So I know he's going to be talking about that. And specifically, he's going to be focusing on one piece, right? About engaging parents. Is that right?
Yes, we're going to be talking about engaging parents. Last week specifically, we talked about leaders.
Yep.
And this week, we're going to talk about partnering with the parents.
And I know we have a very special friend of the pod coming in too, right?
We do.
Yeah. Tell
Sherry
us all about
Surratt.
Sherry Surratt.
Yes, ma'am.
What does she do?
Sir. What's her...
Yes, last time I checked, I was a sir.
I'm sorry about that, friend.
What is her position? What is her title? What does she do?
Yes, Sherry, she's incredible. She is our executive director of family strategy here at Orange.
Yep.
And she's not only the executive director at Orange, but she is the former CEO of Mothers of Preschools, or maybe you know it as MOPS. And she really knows what she's talking about when it comes to engaging parents.
Yeah, I cannot wait to have her in here. She is a great friend of the pod. But before we get to Sherry or Reggie, I want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by You Lead Coaching, a brand new online coaching resource for staff, for kids, for students, for next-gen ministry leaders. It's a fantastic resource. If you need accountability, if you need resources, if you need help of any kind, I want to encourage you to go to ylcoaching.com. That is ylcoaching.com. But for now, we're going to go over to Reggie with some information about how you can better engage parents.
So for the next few minutes, we want to talk about the issue of family and what it means to create a context to invite the family to partner with your church. When I think of families, I think of holidays. What do you think is the number one holiday for families in our country? Well, it's Christmas. Here's another question. What do you think is the number two holiday for families? Any idea? It happens to be something that I'd like to talk about for a few minutes, and it may even seem a little strange that we're talking about it with Christian leaders, but it absolutely is one of the most dynamic, exciting holidays of the calendar year for families, and it's Halloween. The number two holiday in America, Halloween, and there's just something unbelievable about Halloween. We could talk about what some Christians think are wrong with Halloween, or we could just for a few moments put that on a shelf and ask ourselves some questions about Halloween and why so many families love it. Instead of focusing on what's wrong about Halloween, let's talk about what might be right about Halloween. Because Halloween is this season of the year in which families in neighborhoods gather together and they have an unbelievable experience. Just imagine how powerful it is for so many families. When you listen to the laughter, When you take a look at the generosity, you taste the sugar, you feel the energy, you see the glow in the children's eyes, you notice the parents interacting with their kids, there really is something a little magical about Halloween. And when I think about Halloween, I just can't help but ask the question, why can't the church have more experiences, more opportunities like that environment to put families together, to create an atmosphere where they connect, where we capture the imagination of children? It's so important that we understand not necessarily whether you like the holiday or not, but the principle that runs in the background of the holiday that connects families together and again puts them in a place where they enjoy being together and having an experience together. Here's the point. As a church, you have 40 hours in a given year. 40 hours to say everything you can possibly say to make sure that you connect what's important to the life of a child. But when you look at the potential of the family to make a difference in the life of the child, the potential looks a lot different. You have 40 hours in a given year. The family has 3,000 hours in a given year. When you really evaluate the non-sleeping hours of a family that they have in a calendar year, there's a lot of untapped energy, a lot of untapped time that most families have not really considered that they have to make an investment in the faith of their own sons and daughters and their own children. Now, the point is this. You have 40, family has 3,000. You can make sure that you spend all of the time and energy and all of your resources and all of your family to make sure these hours turn out like they should, or you can decide to take a percentage of your time, a percentage of your energy, your volunteers, your budget, your margin, and point it to the 3,000 hours that a family has. I mean, if you only think about this, you leave all that on the table. But if you were to take 10%, 15% of how you organize your resources and point that at the family, you would be tapping into a number of different opportunities the family can have to engage with a child. You have 40 hours, the family has 3,000 hours. That's why we say no one has more potential to influence a child's heart, a child's faith, than a parent. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right? Influencing a child's faith, that we do everything we can possibly do, not just to build a bigger church or a bigger family or a better family, but that we ultimately make sure that we're influencing a child's faith. And here's the difference. As a church, you have influence on a Sunday. You can do everything you can possibly do to create an experience for a kid on a Sunday to do something to their faith in that hour or two that you have on a Sunday morning. The family has an opportunity to do something different, to nurture an everyday kind of faith. So what you do as a church can leverage this if you're creative and if you think it through. This is why Moses said thousands of years ago that the best way to transfer faith to the heart of a child is to understand this rhythm that exists in the family schedule and calendar. That the goal is ultimately to somehow create this kind of everyday faith experience. That's why he said, think about these things and pass them on to your children when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you rise up. Because Moses was concerned that their faith became marginalized and it wasn't something that was a part of their everyday experience, because Moses wanted their relationship with God to be a relationship that was real every day. You see, kids need leaders who will help them move in a positive direction of their faith, but they also need parents and families that will help them move in a positive direction of their faith. And here's what we also know, and this is important as a church leader to realize, that parents intuitively feel this responsibility. I've never met a parent who did not feel and understand that they had an obligation in some sense to help their kids move in a positive direction when it came to their morals or when it came to their spiritual growth and spiritual development. As a matter of fact, Barna, in some of their research, has revealed something that I think is significant to know about parents. That most parents, over 90% of parents, feel like they're responsible for the moral development of their own children. No one had to tell them they're responsible. No one had to teach them they're responsible. They intuitively believe they're responsible for the moral development of their own children. Over 80%, this is interesting, of parents who are Christians and non-Christians believe they're responsible for the spiritual formation of their own children. You see, parents are wired to know they're responsible to lead their children. The issue sometimes has to do with the fact, are we as a church tapping into that felt need? Are we as a church helping them leverage what they feel like is their responsibility to live according to that in their own families and their own lives, to help them know what to do with that feeling of responsibility for the moral and spiritual development of their own children? It really boils down to how you define spiritual leadership. I mean, I have to admit that there are times I think that the church defines spiritual leadership for the average parent in terms that are impractical and impossible for a lot of parents. A lot of mothers or a lot of fathers feel like sometimes with a list of things that we give them to do, that there's no way they can live up to that. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But the bottom line is, your job as a leader, your job as a church, is to define spiritual leadership in terms for the family that's possible and practical so they can do the thing they're wired to do as a family. No one has more potential to influence a child than a parent. 3,000 hours of potential. But here's the second principle. No one has more potential to influence a parent than a church. The church is very strategically positioned in culture and in community to have influence with a family. I think one of the reasons the church doesn't have influence with the family the way that it should is because of the way the church thinks about the family, the way the church has developed over time an attitude about the family. And so I want you to think about this for just a second. There's 3,000 hours of potential on the table that the family has to influence the children of the next generation. So the question is, what are you going to do with that? And how are you going to influence the parent? And could it be that one of the best places for us to start is to just think in terms of how do you think about the family? And what is your attitude toward them? I think there's several things that I wish churches would really start thinking about or acting like when it comes to the family that I think would ultimately change the landscape of how we influence parents. One is this. If you would start thinking and acting like every parent wants a better story for their family. I mean, the truth is the parents in your community, the parents outside of your church, want to have a better future for their kids and want to have a better future for their family and want to have better relationships with each other. But sometimes as a church, because we have so narrowly defined the pictures that we have for family, we're not inviting them into a better story. As a matter of fact, I think one of the worst things the church actually does is we hold up a picture to say to families, this is what you should look like and this is what you should be like if you're going to participate and come to our church. We think in the terms of a picture mindset, not of a story mindset. And if we had time, we would just talk about that one issue for the rest of our session together. But I just for a moment want you to understand there are two different approaches you can take to the family. One is I'm trying to get families to conform to my picture. Second is I'm trying to invite families into a bigger story for their life. And if you're going to buy into the bigger story mindset, it means you got to buy into the stat and understand the stat I'm about to give you. And that's this, that less than 30% of families are represented by a husband and wife who live with their own biological children. I don't know what your picture of family life is. I don't know if your church has defined what you think family should be like or look like, but I'm just leaning into it to say for a few minutes that most families that live in your community, most families who stopped going to your church, maybe don't come to your church or stop going to your church because we had a picture of what we were trying to say family should look like and they didn't measure up to our pictures. Your job is not necessarily to lean into families to get them to conform to your picture. Your job as a church and a leader is to help families know that there's a bigger story of restoration and redemption, a story that's linked again to the gospel, that in their world and life will help them have better relationships as a family, will help them succeed in their life when it comes to giving their kids a better future. And that every parent, and that's the key phrase here, every parent has the potential to have a better story. And every parent wants a sense of hope when it comes to what ultimately God has for them or God can do in their story for their family and their life. So something fundamentally could change in your church if you simply decided every family desires and wants a better story. And second, that every parent will do something more. What do you mean? Well, my experience for families has literally been that every parent I meet wants to be a better parent. They want to do this better. The problem, again, comes sometimes with our list and our expectations and what we lay on top of a family or on top of a parent, and they think, I can't live up to that. But I've never yet met a parent who doesn't have it within them to want to do something better as a husband or as a wife or as a mother or as a father with their children. The problem is if we expect them to do everything, we can shut them down and they won't do anything. Instead of leaning into them and saying, listen, we want to give you some things to help you do something more. I know in our strategy, we simply lean into parents and families and say, listen, if you can't do a lot of things, at least do these three things. We call it our cue. We want parents every week to simply connect their kids to part of God's story so they can understand, you know, something in Scripture. And we want them to also uncover something about their life so that relevant thing we talked about in message connects with them and they see how God's story fits in with their story. and then to experience something together as a family. If we can just get them to do those three things in the course of a week, we have raised the bar. We have tapped into the 3,000 hours they have as parents to do something else with their kids. Because if they weren't doing anything at all and they do something more, that something more can be huge when it comes to the life of the average kid. Let me make this real specific for you for just a second. If the father, who's never prayed with his fifth grade son, decides because of something we say or something we do as a church to encourage their family to start praying with their fifth grade son, and that's the only difference, that's the only change that makes, now this fifth grade son, once or twice a week, has a father who's praying with him, do you think that makes a big difference? We think it does. And we think instead of overloading parents to get them to do too many things, to lean into the family and to encourage them to do a few things, will make a bigger difference than people can even imagine with the family. Every parent wants a better story. Every parent will do something more. And every parent may be coming to your church this Sunday. What do you mean every parent? I'm talking about parents that you meet in the restaurant, parents that maybe work in the office with you that don't go to church. If you're doing this right, if you're understanding this principle isn't just for those parents who are in your church. This principle is for you to understand the potential of parents who are outside your church. The one thing that we don't want churches to do is to just think we're trying to teach these principles in order to help the church be better and bigger. We really want to teach these principles so you understand it's your responsibility to send a message to parents outside the church that you have a potential team of people waiting to be their partners and to help them win. And the goal would be for every parent to show up. The question is, are you ready? Have you thought through the implications of that? Have you decided in the context of your environments that what you're supposed to be focused on is not just the child who shows up on Sunday morning, but it's also the parents who show up with their children? And how you can, for a moment, even for a few seconds, lean into them and help them understand how to take what you're starting here, this strategy, this plan of unpacking for a kid what they need to know and what they need to be, and handing it to them so they can go home and continue it every day of the week. Another part of the Barna research that was interesting was that only one out of five families who showed up at churches said the church ever did anything at all to help them as a family understand how to connect and understand as parents how to be better parents to do this thing that they feel like they're supposed to do. Only the church can change that. Only the church can create a better strategy for that. So what we're really saying is that your job is to cast a unique kind of vision to the parents who show up at your church, the parents who come to your church. And it's going to sound a little strange when I say it, but it's really simple. Your job, literally, is to help parents know that what happens at home is more important than what happens at church. As important as you think your church is and your time with them is, and it is, what happens at home is at least just as important, if not more important. And that the way you establish that is to make sure that you keep leaning into the family and saying to the family and to saying to the parent, here is what we want you to partner with us to do because we want you to be a part of the strategy because this isn't something that we can do alone. This is something that you have to do with us because the battle for the future of your children and the battle for the heart of your children and the battle for the faith of your children is an important thing for us to think about in terms of being a collective community to help them win. That's what Nehemiah did. I mean, if you go back and you look at the text, there's an interesting part of the story of Nehemiah that I had missed for years. It happened about halfway through the building of the wall when the people were getting discouraged and they were getting tired. And Sanballat, the enemy, even recognized they were getting tired and he threatened an attack. And while he threatened an attack, Nehemiah even realized it was a defining critical moment in the story of the rebuilding of Jerusalem. So Nehemiah did an amazing thing as a leader. He pulled the families together, he pulled the leaders together, and he had a meeting. And he said something that I had never noticed in Scripture. And if you look at this passage of Scripture, Nehemiah, it's interesting. It says that he stationed the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, positioning them, notice this, by families, with their swords, spears, and bows. And after I looked things over, he said, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, notice this, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. It's just interesting that in a leader's wisdom, when it seemed like morale was down, He made it crystal clear for everyone to understand what was at stake and what was important. He posted the people in the exposed places on the wall by families. And he leaned into the families and he said to the parents, listen, you're fighting for your sons and your daughters. You're fighting for your wives and your homes. This isn't just about the building of the wall of the city of Jerusalem. This is about your children. This is about your sons and daughters. This is about your homes. What he did in that moment is he enlisted a generation of parents to understand that they were responsible for the spiritual growth of their children. They're responsible for the faith of their children. They were responsible for the future of their children. And what was at stake was not simply a construction project, but it was their lives. And in a simple moment in time, he recast vision for them to understand that what happened in this moment, what happened in their family, was the key. So when you hear us say the phrase reactivate the family, what we're saying is don't just be active here. Think in terms of leading parents to be active. To reactivate the family means you're engaging them to get them to do their part on building the wall. You're engaging them to understand that their children's future, spiritual future, is not just your responsibility, it's their responsibility. You're helping them understand that they're not just handing off their children for you to fix them spiritually, but you're willing to be a partner with them so that this idea of raising a generation who understands the faith and a relationship with God is something that both leaders and parents do together. And that's Orange.
Well, there was just so much amazing stuff in that clip, right?
It was so good.
Yes, it was. And to help us unpack that a little bit further, we are joined in the Think Orange Bunker by our good friend, Sherry Surratt, who is the Executive Director of Family Strategy at Orange. Hey, Sherry.
Hey, it's great to be here.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great today.
Do you prefer Sherry or Cherie?
I prefer Sherry.
Because that's your actual name.
That's my actual name.
Perfect.
That's what I'll answer to.
Well, that's going to talk perfectly. Hey, I just want to kick off with a quick question. We heard Reggie talk about this idea of parent cue, C-U-E. Where did that name come from? He said it was an acronym. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, the letters stand for C, connect with God's story. We want a parent to be able to talk with their kids about what is this whole story of God and how God made us and made them. The U stands for uncover something about life. We want a parent to be able to make that story real with their kids and really talk about what does that mean in their life.
Yep.
And the E talks about experience something together. We want a family to walk out that story by going through life, doing things together and having experiences.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Hey, so Reggie talked about the level of influence a parent has with a child versus the influence the church has with the child.
Yeah.
And considering holidays, sicknesses, family events, and vacations, he was saying that at best, the church has about 40 hours to influence a kid, and the parent has 3,000. Can you help us understand what the church should focus on in those 40 hours?
Absolutely. You know, we've researched this, and we know that there are naturally occurring times in the daily life of every family, no matter what their family looks like. There's morning time when everybody is getting up. There's bedtime when people are going to bed. There's meal time, whether that meal is happening around a table or in the car, whether it's grabbing tacos, going through Taco Bell. These are the moments that we give very specific cues of what to talk to your child about, how you can do something fun, how you can engage their hearts together, how you can experience something together as a family that is very meaningful, that stimulates great conversation.
I love that.
So you just mentioned that parents often have questions at these inflection points throughout the year. I'm wondering from a more specific, more personal sort of point of view, I know that I often have questions about my teenage daughters every night. Like, why is one of them gone crazy? Why is she spending all of her time in her bedroom? When should I get them on technology? When should I allow them to have a social media account? Are they the sort of things that you would cover?
Absolutely. We dive right in. And, you know, parenting is all about questions, right? So you're asking, what do I do? How do I do it? When do I do it? Those are exactly the topics that we dive into. We give you prompts and ways to talk to your child about sexual integrity, about faith, about technology. You know, a big question that parents have when their child is entering into middle school, high school, when do I let my child have a cell phone? Well, we dive right into that and give you some help to think through it.
Can you answer that question? For somebody who's listening right
right now, they're wrestling with their kid about when they should have either a cell phone or get on social media, what would your advice be?
Yeah, you know, you have to take in the maturity of your child into context. So some middle schoolers can handle the responsibility of a cell phone. Mm-hmm. Some of them you have to wait maybe till they're in ninth grade. And I think as a family, you sit down and you talk about why do you need a cell phone and how does our family handle that? And, you know, you bring that into the context of your whole family values and you really make that a big conversation. And we're here to help you do that.
That's awesome. One of the analogies I heard that I love the most about that is like just like every 16-year-old isn't ready to drive a car by themselves when they turn 16, you have to take in consideration of that maturity. You think of a cell phone the same way. And I loved that analogy. Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the things that's really difficult because there is no pat answer for any of these things. And that's why we help you think through things and have the conversations. It's really important that you engage your child, that you talk to them, that you're hearing their maturity level, and you're hearing what's in their heart when you make those decisions.
So you're really creating content that a parent can unpack during the week, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We want to give them easy things to do in those available 3,000 hours, things to talk about, things to do in the car, all kinds of fun things that actually make their moments meaningful.
Yeah, it sounds very strategic, which is awesome. But I want to be completely candid here, okay?
Oh, good.
I have three teenage daughters.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I go in to pick up my girls from, you know, their high school or their middle school classes at church,
yeah,
I have the best intentions. I totally want to talk to them on the way home about what they learned about Jesus and all of that.
Yeah.
But considering the fact that I am so busy, I've got so much on, I've got a to-do list that's a mile long, sometimes it just feels like even the having that conversation on the way home is just another thing that I have to add to that list. So what advice would you give me?
You know, when we think about the concept of cue, if a parent really has 3,000 hours that they can make meaningful to be able to spend with their kids, we want to give them bite-sized things that they can do in the moments that naturally occur. Hmm. So we've thought about, you know, a parent doesn't need another thing to do. We don't think that a parent really has to engineer an extra time in their day. We want them to use the times that are already there, the morning time, the time in the car, the time sitting around the table. And we want to give them easy things to do and to talk about in those moments that already occur.
That's awesome. See, I guess sometimes I approach it from the point of view of, you know, there's that old saying, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time. So when I go in to pick up my kids from student ministry, I'm thinking of the whole elephant. And I figure I just don't have time to do that. So,
So
you guys are trying to break it down into those bite-sized pieces so that we can eat the elephant.
Well, can I just say something here? As a ministry leader myself, I admit that I have personally been frustrated with parents, maybe like Dave or other parents, saying things maybe like they love soccer more than they love church or they're not attending my events.
Hang on, the parents say that or the kids?
The parents say that. Maybe. Okay. I don't know. I guess it depends.
Okay. So you don't like parents like me?
No. It's not that I don't like parents. I've just been guilty of this.
Okay.
Feeling this way as a ministry leader. And it's hard. Like, what advice would you give for church leaders to kind of shift their attitude toward families inside and outside the church?
Yeah. And, you know, I was a family ministry pastor, too. And I remember thinking about working with the parents was the thing I least wanted to do, right? Because aiming at the kids is easy. I think as you shift your focus and think about we are not just aiming at the kids, we are aiming at the entire family. And, you know, we want to give the parents things that are meaningful in their parenting life today. We want to talk about the things they're facing today, those tantrums, those things that are going to help them get through the day with their kids. As a family ministry leader, those are the things we want to think about in the content that we provide on the weekend. What can a parent actually use during the week coming up? And, you know, we've developed in a strategy, we've thought about what are the naturally occurring times for a family, and we've developed a strategy around those times. There are inflection points that every family goes through every single year. In the fall, they're getting ready for school. In January, they're trying to get back to normal. In the springtime, they're trying to finish school well. In the summer, they're getting ready for a great family summer of fun things to do and recharge moments. We want to aim some activities and events and things like that at those inflection points, because in every inflection point, there is a question that a parent is asking. And as a church leader, we want to be the answer to their question, to their need as a parent.
Sherry, I love what you just said, like about the natural flow of a family. I think that's so important. Just hearing you say that reminds me as a ministry leader, like if that's the most important thing, then I need to really be thinking, what is that family going through? Yeah. Not just the pressure I'm feeling from maybe my leadership to get people to attend an event or a service.
Right.
Love that.
Exactly. And you know, every parent, whether they attend your church or not, they are thinking about some of the same things. If school is starting, that's what they're thinking about. What is the school year going to be? What's our rhythm going to be as a family in this new school year? So you as a church have an opportunity, a unique opportunity, to be able to step in and help them answer those questions. How are we going to manage this year? And offering an event that every parent would want to come to, whether they attend your church or not, is incredibly powerful. And that's how you can impact them.
So what I'm hearing as a parent is that the church should be playing a role in the natural progress of my family life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Instead of expecting you as the parent to jump to our rhythm, the church should actually be asking these questions. Where is a family right now? What are they thinking? What are they struggling with? And we go to meet them instead of expecting them to come and jump to our rhythm.
So Sherry, what about the students whose parents don't attend the church or whose parents aren't believers? Like, how does the church partner with that family?
Yeah. And you know, again, those parents are thinking and feeling the same things that the parents and families are that are attending your church. And so it's really important to kind of get in the mind of a parent. And that's what we're doing at Orange. We're thinking about that strategy. What resources, what events, what kinds of things would any parent come to so that you can kind of come alongside them and let them know you are their partner and you are there to help.
Hey, Sherry, one of the things that I heard Reggie say, which really stood out to me, he said that only 30% of families look like a still married mom and dad with biological kids. So that means 70% of families that are attending our church are probably a single parents, maybe adopted stepkids, divorced, things like that. Mm-hmm. What do you think the church should be doing to include those 70% of people?
Yeah, you know, it's really important for us to look around and see who our customer is, you know, in family ministry. And our customer can look like any number of things. There are many families where the grandparent is raising the child. Mm. There are many families where there's a caretaker, not even a parent, that is caring for that child. And when we think about our content, when we think about our language, when we think about the things that we offer, we need to be really careful that we are not alienating anyone by always using the term mom and dad, because that's the minority of our families. And we want to reach everyone who has influence over a child.
Yeah, as soon as we start using those terms in the church, we're basically ignoring the 70% of the audience that's coming in, the visitors
Absolutely.
That are coming in. And we're essentially devaluing their worldview in some way, right?
Yeah, and we're making them feel like, oh, okay, I'm not who you're talking about. I don't belong here. I don't fit here. Something's wrong with us. So we want to be very careful in the terminology that we use and even the types of events. So if we offer things for married parents, we want to be really careful with that because many parents aren't married.
Yeah. I've heard Andy Stanley say that when a guest comes to church, they need to be able to see themselves.
Right.
Different nationalities and that sort of thing. Women as well as men up on stage, stuff
Accents.
Like that. Accents. I think that's super important myself. So what I'm hearing you say is that needs to not just happen in the main auditorium, but that has to happen down the hall in kids ministry as well. That families coming in need to see and hear themselves represented.
Absolutely. And you know, at some of your events in family ministry, single moms need to be able to speak, single dads, grandparents, all kinds of different ways that the family looks. That needs to be represented.
And I imagine that needs to be represented on things like promotional materials, social media, stuff like that. If they're only seeing the traditional mom and dad, they're missing that 70%. That was so interesting.
Yeah.
So we also just heard that 90% of parents have this feeling that they're responsible for the moral development of their child. And our responsibility as the church is to help them to know what to do with that feeling. So they want to do it, but maybe they're not sure like where they can start or what resources are available. So Sherry, would you share with us what resources Orange has available for church leaders who are looking to engage that parent?
Yeah, we try to think, what is a parent thinking and feeling right now? What questions do they have? And we aim right there with a blog. So we have a blog that has all kinds of content, fresh content coming out every week. Along with that, we have a podcast that is easily digestible content that you can grab on the go, in the car, in the gym. We also have an app coming out at the end of April that is going to cue the parent every single week. A parent who has a baby all the way through the age of a high schooler, graduating from high school, with daily cues of ways they can engage their child and talk with them and have great things to do. We're all about the cue, so we look for every way that we possibly can.
One of the things I love the most about the Parent Cue resource is it really provides parents with phase-specific information about their kid. Like if the parent is wondering, like, what happened to my child, the Parent Cue gives information not just on situations, but on developmental things that really help them parent them better. For example, like, why is my 13-year-old's friends always fighting all the time and their friend group is changing nonstop? The Parent Cue says to them, hey guys, it's normal for friends to change at this age. Don't freak out. It's okay.
Hey guys, we have got some great news.
Woo!
You want to know what it is?
What?
We have our first listener question come through on our website, which is
ThinkOrangePodcast.com.
So we've got a question here from George from Nashville. He is a middle and high school volunteer, but he's actually leading the whole ministry at his church.
He's a hero.
He is a hero. He deserves a medal.
Totally. A trophy, medal, Hall of Fame, whatever.
We'll get him something. George, thank you so much for your question. He's asking you this, Sherry. What do I do when I have parents who don't engage or who are just not around?
Oh, great question, George. You know, there are going to be many parents who will not come to an event, who will not come to the door of your youth group meeting or anything like that. You need to be able to go to where the parent is. Parents are on social media. So we encourage our leaders to send out these cues, send out this information on your social media outlets, your Facebook pages, things like that. And we make it really easy for you to do that.
How do you do that? How do you make it easy?
Well, we collect everything. We collect the cues. We make them very specific and engaging for a parent. You can just pop that right into your social media. Yeah. We write it for you.
I mean, just from experience, finding ways to engage with that parent who won't respond to an email, won't open an email, won't respond to a text message or a call, finding out something that they're interested in and connecting on that makes it way more likely for them to connect to anything that the church is resourcing them with.
I totally agree. Sometimes I think churches get lost in this idea that we engage with parents or we engage with guests for 1 hour every single week. But what I always say to people is you can engage with them for the other 167 hours of the week on social media.
Absolutely.
Sherry, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
You're so welcome. Sherry.
I'm surprised that Ashley hasn't sang a Neil Diamond song for you. There is a Neil Diamond song. You got the way to move me.
I'm sorry, Sherry. I don't know Neil Diamond.
You sang Neil Diamond in episode zero.
I only know that line.
Okay, fair enough. Sherry, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Well, we just covered some great material there from Reggie and Sherry about how the church can better engage parents. Ash, what did you get from all of that?
You know, I was reminded just as a ministry leader how important it is. I actually was working on this morning. I was working on parent cues. Like, in the natural flow of a day, what times do parents intersect with their children? And what is something I can cue them with, whether it's a conversation or something they can do or say, or they can do together as an experience to set that parent up for a win with their child?
Yeah, that was so good. I love how that ran out. As a ministry leader, is this something that you think most ministry leaders even think about?
You know, I think they do, except I have to be honest with you, before I've thought about this strategy, it's so easy to get like caught up in all the things you need to do as a ministry leader and like the programs and the boxes you need to check off your list that you forget that sometimes the best way to tap into the energy that's already existing is the parents who are the number one influence.
Yeah, I agree. And look, even as a parent, what I picked up from that runs straight into what you're saying. In fact, that as a parent, I need to be leaning into the church a little bit more, but I find that often it might be lost on a ministry leader who's worried about getting all the boxes in the right place, making sure that the program runs well. But if I'm getting those cues as a parent, then I know that's going to help me not only be more trustworthy in the church, but also help me raise my kid in a more faithful environment.
And I can imagine that a lot of people listening might be thinking like, oh my gosh, you're telling me I need to engage with the students. I need to engage with the leaders. Now I need to engage with the parents. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't have more margin.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's like you can actually like multiply yourself and your influence by tapping into that resource.
Dang, that is some good stuff right there. Whether you're a parent or a ministry leader, we really hope that today's podcast has been an encouragement, a blessing, and hopefully a challenge for you as well. And there are some things that we would love for you to do right now, right, Ash?
Yes.
Yes, I've got the list. Don't worry, I'm going to go through the list. If you're listening right now, we would love for you to make sure that you are subscribing to this podcast, whether it's on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.
And we want to hear from you. We want you to leave a review on iTunes.
We do want you to leave a review on iTunes. That's a huge thing. You can even put in there how amazing this podcast is.
Or how good my voice is.
Or how good Ash's voice is. Please review that as well. But don't let that drop your stars down. We want the stars to be really high every single time. And you can also share this podcast with your friends. We would love for you to do that as well. Hey, Ash, you know what I always say? When you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.